Put those searchlights up on the tower right now. Move, move.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. Today I have Dr. Jim Walmsley, the Emeritus Professor at the University of New England in the School of Geography. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Herb.
Well, thanks for coming in to Community Spotlight. So we might just start off with, are you a local?
Well, it depends how you define local, but I came here in late 1971, and I've been here ever since. But compared to some of the third, fourth, fifth generation people...
Well, no, I think here we say 15 years is about...
Oh, 15. Okay, well, I'm certainly a local if 15 is the cut-off point.
I recognise a English heritage there somewhere. Tell us about where you come from in England.
I come from the north of England. I'm a proud Lancastrian. I still harbour thoughts of the War of the Roses against Yorkshire. I lived in a little village called Ribchester, which, as the name suggests, was a Roman camp on the River Ribble. And my family have been there, sadly, for an awfully long time, not very adventurous. They can be traced back to about 1600 or earlier.
So I also detect there that there's a bit of a passion for history. Now, you came to Australia in 68. What did you come to Australia for?
Well, I'd finished my first degree at Cambridge University. It was a miserable, wet Saturday afternoon. I opened The Economist and I saw adverts for scholarships to ANU in Canberra. I thought there's got to be something better than miserable, wet, rainy days. So I applied for this scholarship to go to Canberra, to ANU. Luckily got it, and that decided me on my immediate future.
So, as I said, history might be in your field. Geography. So you did a PhD in geography.
I did a PhD in geography, yes. I've always been fascinated by the environment around us. I think geography is the most important subject you can possibly study. I'm a great enthusiast for it. We only have one environment, one Earth, and as humans, we've made a good job of messing it up. But I'm interested in how people cope with various environments. I've written about how people cope with living in cities. I've talked about rural areas and how they're changing. And I've had a particular interest over the years in migration, why people go from one area to another.
So it's true to say then you're a human geographer.
I am a human geographer. It's a curious expression. It doesn't mean much to anybody who isn't one. Physical geography is study of climate, rivers, landforms, biogeography. Human geography looks at people and their interaction with the environment.
And that's where you met your wife. She was a nurse there.
She was a nurse in Canberra. She comes from Hobart. She came across to do midwifery at the Canberra Community Hospital, as it then was, which was on the peninsula down in Acton in the ACT, very close to University House. There were lots of parties with the nurses and PhD students, and the rest is history.
So, suffice to say, you came to Armidale in 71, and she was pregnant.
She was pregnant when we came here, my first job, and our son was born in 72 at the Armidale Hospital, and 2 years later, our daughter was born at the Armidale Hospital.
So at UNE, you started off as a lecturer?
I started off as a lecturer and gradually climbed up the greasy pole and ended up as a professor, and was very happy to be called an emeritus professor once I'd retired.
So that was in 2009. School of Geography has probably changed now. It was School of Geography when I was at UNE. So let's go back. You mentioned that you had a passion for human geography. Can you actually point to any time where you actually knew that that was going to float your boat for the rest of your career?
I think there are obviously a few factors that prompted my interest in it. One was the immediate factor of living in a small village with surrounding cotton industry towns and so on. And I was always fascinated as to why these places had developed as they had, why there was cotton weaving up in Lancashire, why the farming was all small-scale mixed farming. There were things like moving sheep up onto the high pastures of the fells during the summer and bringing them down to shear in the winter. And I became fascinated by the way people interacted with the environment around them.
So tell me, coming to Armidale in 71, and you've been here ever since, what do you like about Armidale? Does it have any similarities with Lancashire?
It does in some ways. I mean, the climate is very similar. I mean, okay, we don't get as much snow as we did perhaps in the north of England, and we get warmer summers and so on. But it is, in fact, very similar in some respects. And I've always lived in smaller places. And Armidale's probably the largest place I've ever lived in on a permanent basis, other than, you know, doing a PhD in Canberra and things like that.
Just sort of comment on the human geography side of Armidale from your perspective as a human geographer.
Well, I've been interested in how the city has changed ever since I arrived. Way back when I first came here in the early 70s, I did a study of retailing in Armidale and where the shops were and what sort of shops. Because in those days, people used to jump into cars, drive down to Tamworth and buy everything in the bigger city. And the Chamber of Commerce were a bit worried about this. And so I did an investigation of what we had, and I've monitored the changes ever since in that. I'm also interested in the environment in the sense of national parks and tourism and the way that that can attract people to the area.
That begs the question then, and I'll put you on the spot, the future of Armidale, where do you see it going?
Well, I think you've got to set it in the context of the future of many small rural settlements anyway. I think we've got to be realistic and say that there are lots of really small Australian places that won't survive. They'll linger on, but they won't be very significant. There's a cut-off when places get big enough to be self-sustaining, and I think Armidale has enough going for it to attract migrants, the so-called counter-urbanisers who are fed up with Sydney house prices and want to move to Armidale or places like Armidale. I think we can tap into that. There's also the phenomenon of retirement migration. People who've lived in rural and regional Australia perhaps don't want to retire to the big city or to the Costa Geriatrica down the coast, and we can attract those people here. So I can see a future, and in many ways the rise of the internet is a blessing. We're as well connected as the city is with many fields of endeavour.
So you mentioned Tamworth there before. So I've always saw Tamworth and Armidale are regional service centres, but Tamworth has its own self-perpetuating drive. So not only is it a regional service centre and all the industries that support the regional services that are required and the economy from the regions and the rural areas, but they have things like the country music sort of component that draws people every year. Then you start getting a lot of specialists. It has a population, is it 60,000 now?
Yeah, about that, yes.
We're half that. That self-perpetuating thing seems to be what Tamworth has got over us. How could we build something that continues and not relying on a rural service centre?
Well, it's a very good question, and you're right. Tamworth does have enough basics to use those basics as a platform for future growth. Armidale, and I've got to be a bit critical here, I think has probably been a bit too conservative for too long, and people have not been aware of opportunities or prepared to seize those opportunities. A lot of people, particularly the people who've been here a long time, have the attitude I've discovered that this is how we've always done it and we'll keep on doing it this way. And in a turbulent environment, in a rapidly changing world, we've got to abandon those sort of conservative ideas.
Certainly, as you said, move away from those conservative views and be a bit more creative about how we channel both the services and people into the region.
I don't want to suggest that there are are too many conservative people here. There are some real go-getters in town who are doing wonderful things and are open to new ideas, and they are the future of the place in many ways.
Now, I think you're exactly right. The other thing is you mentioned retirement. Now, I've spoken to a couple of people about why they've retired or why people they service have retired, and it's because they were a university student here. They enjoyed their time here in Armidale. They know it's a safe place. They know how to get around. They like the climate. Maybe they've got similarities of where they grew up, but they want to come back to a safe place and retire. And Armidale is that place. And they had their experience. Maybe they met their partner or whatever. They've made their fortune or lost their fortune, whichever has happened, but they want to come back and retire. If we had the health services that could cater for a greater population of retirees, having the university and the alumni we've had over the long time that the university has gone on, and those people are moving into the 60s and 70s, I think that could be a basis.
Absolutely, it could. I think we should be putting more effort into contacting and alerting the alumni to what the place has to offer. Okay, there are constraints, and the medical services are not as good as we'd like them to be, in the sense that the doctors may be very good, but they're massively overworked. And the fact that you can't get into a GP these days because they're closing their books is a major hurdle that we need to jump over before we can see much growth. But I think that Armidale has a lot going for it. I know personally of a couple of couples who toured Australia with a view to settling somewhere other than a metropolitan city, and in both cases, quite independently, when they got to Armidale, this is it, they said, and never got on with the rest of their round Australia tour because they liked what they saw.
So I think going back to the Tamworth, that basis got all the specialists in Tamworth, which isn't too far away. If we had another string to our bow, we would actually create those opportunities for more doctors, more health services. And we've got Tamworth, we've got Coffs, which aren't too far away.
Yep. I think the phrase quality of life and life-work balance, another phrase, are used very widely nowadays, but they're important. I mean, people can see that you need to balance your work and your life and the quality of life. And I think that a lot of professionals need to think of country towns like Armidale as places where you can get a much better work-life balance. I'm thinking particularly of things like commuting. COVID was very interesting in many ways, and one of the interesting ways was the fact that a lot of people chose to work from home, and they can do with the internet nowadays. Well, if you can work from home on the northern beaches of Sydney or out at Penrith, you can work from home in Armidale and enjoy a much more pleasant environment than you would with a 3-hour commute or something of that nature.
Yeah, I think we've had the town and gown relationship, which is fine, but we've also had that reliance on the pastoral industry. But we know that the pastoral industry has changed.
Yeah.
The farming sector has changed. Mechanisation has actually helped reduce the number of people that are employed in the farming sector. And there's a number of projects that we've got with this new council that's just been put in.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they can be progressed, and that will be for the benefit of Armidale.
It will indeed. I've got some doubts about some projects, but delighted to see ideas being thrown around. And I think we could be on a winner with many of the ideas.
So we talked a little about retirement. Prior to your retirement, you mentioned academic writing. So tell me briefly about some of the academic writing that you've done.
It's been of two sorts. I've written a few books that are used as university textbooks, and they were about how people interact with the environment. For example, the world around us is too big and too complex for us to understand it in its entirety, so we build up simplified images of the world in our minds, and then it's those images that determine our behaviour. And we associate certain, we were saying before, Tamworth is progressive, and you can build up an image of a place that might might not be totally accurate, but I've researched the images that people build up. And one interesting study looked at the mental maps of final year students at UNE and where they'd like to go. And they wanted to stay, and I drew it all up as a contour map and so on, and there was a real hole around Sydney. The good old UNE students didn't want to go to Sin City and live down there. Their desired location, once they got a job, was either the coast or the inland. And I, you know, that was an interesting insight, that there's a sort of niche of the demographic profile that is interested in kind of rural areas. So I did a lot of those types of book. I also was engaged in a whole lot of big research projects that produced papers and reports. One of them we worked on was the role of festivals in the rural regeneration process. And I'm talking about the ultimate one, of course, is the Tamworth Country Music Festival. But we looked at all the small festivals that exist in country towns. And these were very interesting. The kind of festival capital of Australia, the region, is actually the Riverina. They have lots of little tiny ones. Now, these are not big money spinners. I mean, Tamworth might be, the Gympie Muster might be, but the small ones bring people together and are important in developing this social capital.
So just as you mentioned that, we've got the Black Gully Festival, which is coming up on the 9th of November. It's a free festival.
Yep.
But the four things that are the elements that they're trying to promote, obviously it's the music. Secondly, and which is what you've mentioned, is bringing community together.
Exactly.
And then there's the connection with the arts, and then there's the role of conservation. So they're the four elements. So that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and we found that the net benefit to a community from organising festivals is enormous. You can't always put a monetary value on it, but it's that building capital, building social capital, and bridging capital, as it's called, where you actually bring people together that might not otherwise have much to do with each other, and you build a bridge between these communities, and you strengthen the overall community thereby.
We just had the Jimmy Barnes out at Peterson's, and that was, everybody loved that, but they came from large catchment area to that event. I'm a big advocate for Peter Allen, because of Peter Allen, fantastic performer, fantastic vocalist, just a real showman. I think something like that, similar to the Elvis Festival down south, where there's trainloads of people that arrive, the Elvis Festival, we could have another little festival like the Peter Allen Festival.
Yeah.
Black Gully, Peter Allen, whoever else, some folk festivals.
Yeah. And when I was saying before that down in the Riverina, that's the sort of region that would be the capital of festivals, there are lots of little ones. You don't just have one big one, a country music festival in January. You have a half a dozen during the year. It might be a food festival. You know, it might be a music festival. It could be an art festival. You could have a big art exhibition. We're doing those sorts of things now with the Armidale Art Gallery, or NARAM putting on special exhibitions. These are in effect festivals of a sort. You can also have sporting ones. We have a big sporting provision in Armidale with the playing fields and the basketball and whatnot, and we could do more to generate sporting festivals.
Yeah, I think we're not short of the talent here, whether it's sporting, whether it's food. Now we're getting a bit more multicultural with all the different communities, but also we are known as a bit of a music town. If music was part of those festivals, it doesn't have to be the main component of the festival, but if it was part, that sort of brings more colour, light and shade to the festival.
Oh, yes. I remember a few years ago, there was a jazz festival. I'm going way back now, in the mall. And my brother-in-law at that stage was from Broken Hill. And he saw immediately the potential of this, went to talk to the organisers who'd come from away, and managed to lure them to Broken Hill a couple of years later for a festival out there. And so you've got to have that open-mindedness and seize the opportunities when they arise.
Well, it's interesting you say jazz. We've actually at the radio station here just introduced a number of jazz, 8 till 9, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Sunday, a two-hour one. We know that there's people that love jazz out there, so we're playing regularly, bring back that jazz into Armidale. But I think you're exactly right. We've had this conversation in 2ARM that jazz was and can be brought back into Armidale, and yeah, as you said, a festival would be fantastic.
Yeah. You're talking to the wrong person here, though, because I've got to admit that I'm one of the 4% of the population who literally is tone deaf, and music plays no part in my life. I was talking to you, Herb, and in a 2ARM studio, and I feel dreadful saying that, but I'm in good company with Che Guevara, Teddy Roosevelt, and various others also were tone deaf. So I can't understand why people like jazz.
All right, well, we'll move away from jazz there for a sec. So retirement, 2008. You've done a few things now. So you got involved in photography, painting, and a detective story. So let's go through a few of those.
Well, the photography I've always had an interest in. I could never abide the old days, as I call them, when you had to use chemicals in a dark room and dip your fingers in something that you could smell for the rest of the day. So the arrival of digital photography was a blessing for me. I've gone into landscape photography. I've travelled quite extensively various countries around the world, focused primarily on landscape photography. Nowadays, I'm really into black and white photography. I think this is where it's all at. I know that preceded colour photography and it was very popular 60 years ago, but now I think it's making a resurgence. I tried painting. When my mother was visiting us in Australia at one stage, aged almost 70, she went to a group that were doing paintings, and I think she pestered them so much, they gave her some brushes and a canvas and said, go over there and try yourself. She became hooked, and when she sadly died, I inherited all her brushes, paints. And so when I retired, I thought, well, I've got to give this a go now, with no more excuses. So I've been to various classes, and I've joined the Art Society, and that's how I got into that area.
So we used to paint together the men's shed on a, I think it was a Tuesday or Thursday night with Alana.
Yep.
And experimenting with a whole lot of things. So you mentioned the Armidale Art Gallery or the New England Art Society. So you've been a member of that?
I've been a member of that for, goodness me, I mean, it must be quite a few years now. And it's a fantastic group. It really is. It's very welcoming, very supportive, a very friendly group. And we're lucky to have the gallery in the mall. It really is a splendid area. And now that we're on the ground floor, we can wander in off the street very easily. Visitor numbers are rising significantly.
I did an interview with Andrea Gledhill last week, and the art gallery has gone from strength to strength, since from upstairs on the first floor down to ground level. Now, I know that you've got a couple of pieces in the exhibition that's currently on for one more week. It's called Travels with Gulliver.
Yes. Once I got hooked on painting, I decided I needed a little bit of guidance. So I enrolled at the New England Regional Art Museum in course on Wednesdays, where a teacher called Kerry Gulliver has a class, and people do watercolour, oils, pastels, acrylics, whatever. We decided last year that we should have an exhibition of all our work, which is very, very varied, and we called it Travels with Gulliver, and people liked it, so this year we're doing Travels with Gulliver too, and I've got a couple of pieces in there. It's a very sort of varied exhibition with lots of different styles, lots of different subject matter, but very interesting as a result.
So I think it's on for one more week, Travels with Gulliver. It's at the Armidale Art Gallery, which is in the mall.
Yep, next to the news agents, now that the news agents has moved in next door.
Go and see those. So how many artists have exhibiting with the travels of Gulliver?
Almost 20, I would say. Oh, okay. You know, it's a large selection.
Well, it's a large space. It's really well lit. It really shows off all the works very well. Now, you mentioned painting and lessons. The great thing about Armidale, you can actually, if you're into art or into whatever you want, writing or whatever you're into, you can actually get lessons. Now, you'd mentioned NeRAM has lessons. I've been to lessons down at the Pack Salad Gallery underneath there, did a few of them, did some lessons through the Armidale Art Society, the New England Art Society, and that's where you actually learn the craft that you're interested in, then you're interested in following.
Oh, yes, there's, you know, for most interests, there's stuff out there readily available and quality stuff. The instruction you get at these things is really, really very good.
And well priced, I think. And if you actually compared it to a Sydney price for a lesson, you'd be shocked at what the Sydney prices are. You know, they're non-profit organisations like the New England Art Society, Armidale Art Gallery, non-profit, so they're trying to keep their prices down. So I will ask you about your detective story to finish.
Right. I'm a great lover of detective stories, and I've always wanted to write one. I tried one 20 years ago and got rejection slips right left and centre. In retirement, I've tried again. I've got what I think should be a bestseller sitting on the computer at the moment. It's Aussie Noir, and I'm a great fan of Scandi Noir, and it's based in rural Australia. I'm quite pleased with the way it's all panned out. Just about to start another one. I've had 3 rejection slips from agents. I'm about to skip the agents, cut out the middleman, go straight to publishers with it and see how I go.
So would you publish it privately, just on the internet, maybe?
Down the track, that is the kind of fallback position, possibly. But I want somebody to do the hard work of selling it for me.
What was the name again, the detective story?
Well, it's changed a few times, and at the moment it's Somewhere, Nowhere, Anywhere.
Well, look out for that one. I'm sure it will be a bestseller on our bookshelves really soon. So I might wrap this up. Thanks, Jim, for coming in to Community Spotlight. It's been great.
Well, I enjoyed talking to you, Herb.
This is Community Spotlight. We've just heard from Dr. Jim Walmsley, the Emeritus Professor at UNE, retired in the School of Geography, and what has floated his boat over his long career in geography and now in retirement. That's it. Thank you for listening.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.